Fred Film Radio, Rome Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Nicola Comotti here, the 13th edition of the Rome Film Fest, and today I've got two wonderful guests. I'm talking about Michael Mulperger and Baramis Perrier. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Very nice to be here indeed.
So, there's something in the making that actually joins your efforts. You already gave your... You did your toll, so you made your book, and now this book is going to turn into a film. This is kind of very interesting as well, because it's one of the never-ending questions, and also an inner nature of cinema, which is drawing upon literature to make something different. What is your relationship with this? So this kind of filtering of something so pure, such as literature, which is the writer putting something on a white paper becomes a story.
Except it's not pure.
Okay.
because in the first place, no, it's a very good question. In the first place, of course, most fiction comes from fact, which the writer then uses and very often distorts. So if I can take Shakespeare, who is quite a good writer, he could take a character like Julius Caesar. I'm in Rome at the moment, so it's quite a good example. He didn't write a biography of Julius Caesar. He turned that character, that play, into the play that he wanted it to be. And all I do when I'm telling a story is I take the world about me as I see it, and that is the palette I use for my stories. But I think you mustn't think of it as pure. The pure thing is what really happened, and what storytellers do is they bring it to life. But it's not necessarily the life that was true. You change it as you go along. And then filmmakers come along, and they do the next step, which is they take my story and turn it a bit, change it a bit, because they are crafting something that is different. I think it's a mistake to think that it's all the same story. It's not. Each time, it's different. And that's the wonderful thing about stories. As you retell them, they grow, they become more rich, they become more interesting, and the better the filmmaker, the better the story is going to be. And last thing I'll say is this, that with a good film or a good play, you see it for the first time of your own book, and it makes you really cross if it's good, because you know you should have thought of that way of telling the story in the first place, and you want to have that feeling, oh rats, I wish I had done it that way. And I think when you get that feeling, you think to yourself, that's what storytelling is all about. It's expanding the story, enriching the story, which is what Barnaby and his team are going to do, or are doing, with Kensky's Kingdom.
And Barnaby, do you have, like, especially when you draw upon something, you know, for example, let's take Michael's examples or Kensky's Kingdom. Do you have, like, you start, of course, with the ambition and the drive to make something beautiful on its own, but at the same time you feel some sort of responsibility, or perhaps it's kind of, you have to more lean towards the idea of, like, right now we need to make a film that of course pays respect, due respect for the about the book, but at the same time it needs to be its own creature, you know, something outer than the actual book.
Sure. I mean, it absolutely has to be its own creature. I mean, our film is going to be 95 minutes long. Michael's book obviously is much more complex because it's a longer process of storytelling. But I think where the respect comes in, you take the real fundamental elements of the story and the fundamental elements of the character, and you don't change those. You might handle them differently, you might portray them differently. The way we draw Michael, the little boy in the story, might be entirely different. We've never talked about it, but might be entirely different from the way Michael Mulperger has foreseen that character. But we're working in a visual medium and an audio medium, and that's a very different experience, as Michael said before, from reading a book. So there is a kind of purity of reference, but then we have to expand that into a very different medium.
I think what Barnum is saying is that what's really important is to take the spirit of the book, and that's what I know has been done both with the drawings and with the script already. But he's quite right. I've never talked to him about the character I saw in my head of Michael, or indeed of Kensky. That is what Frank Cottrell Boyce has done when he wrote the script, and that's what the illustrators of this, the animators, they are creating. If I was to interfere with that process, then I'd be stopping this new creative process of making a movie. So basically my book is the suggestion, it's the spirit, and then it's up to these people to make the magic.
and I would add one more thing. I think the thing you do really respect is the morality of a story, and I think we haven't strayed from that. There are truths in Michael's story that the film will absolutely represent. As I say, the way we get there, the journey might be slightly different. Terrible cliche, but where we end up will be the same place, I'm absolutely sure.
And talking about spirit, you just said it. I mean, yours is probably one of the toughest jobs as a writer, because you're targeting, trying to communicate and create a dialogue with children, and I would say also young adults. And how did you manage? Because I saw it also personally speaking, like friends that you'd always say, like, I'll never grow too old, I'll always keep my inner child alive. But then life happens, and that, for some people, that inner child actually dies out. How did you manage to keep that kind of level of empathy towards children? Do you see it, do you observe, or do you just, you know, the memories are still alive there?
Ooh, you do ask difficult questions, don't you?
I'm sorry.
No, it's a really, it's a really important question. I think the truth is that yes, I hold my childhood very close to me. The strongest memories I have are of growing up when I was very, very young. Funnily enough, my teenage years have become rather blurred, I think. I don't know quite why that should be so. But then I've got very good memories of being a younger adult. But there was about a gap of about 10 or 12 years when I don't remember things that well. But what I've always managed to do, I think, is to keep the child in me fresh. And there's a way of doing that, I think. I don't think I've done it deliberately. But I think I'm the kind of person who likes to live life to the full. I like to meet interesting people. I like to go places. I like to listen to people and to discover. And the more you discover and the more you listen and the more you learn, the more actually that child stays alive in you. I mean, the truth is, if the child in you dies, then you die. And one of the great problems is with growing up is that because it is tiring, which it is, and life does affect you and you get knockbacks and difficulties, you can grow a skin around you, a protective skin, which keeps the world and its troubles and its dangers at bay. It also keeps the beauties and the joys at bay as well. That's the problem with it. So I think the great thing writers have to do is to remain vulnerable to the world about them, to the people around them, and that will keep the spirit of the child alive. So when I am writing, I'm writing, I hope, with that spirit. And I think that's maybe why some children, at any rate, connect with the stories, because they recognize maybe that someone who is like them is speaking to them. What you must never do with a child, ever, whether you're writing for them or talking to them, is to talk down to them. You mustn't sort of be on your pedestal as an adult and say, well, actually, this is how the world is, my child. Children won't respond to that. I think they respond to honesty. So you tell it like it is. And sometimes that means you're going to hurt them, because the world is a difficult place and it's a hurtful place. So you do have to be clear. And I mean, this story of Kinski's Kingdom, in that sense, is very important, because at one particular moment, when Kinski and Michael have got to know one another and have got to learn to trust each other, Kinski tells him why he's on this island alone. And the story he tells him is truly shocking for us as adults, and certainly for children. And many children won't even know this. The story he tells Michael is that he was in the Japanese Navy in the Second World War, and at a certain point his ship was bombed by American planes right towards the end of the war, and he heard on the radio, almost as the ship was going down, that his hometown of Nagasaki had this bomb, atomic bomb, dropped on it. His family lived in that town. So what came to his head is, why would I go home? Because everything had been destroyed. Now, for a child to learn that there is indeed now much worse, there's the potential for such destruction, is serious and really difficult to take on board. So it has to be done very, very carefully. Children have to know there's dangers out there. I think that's very important. And the book finally is about reconciliation of both the generations and indeed of the war. I mean, this is the Japanese were the enemy of the British. This is a British child, a Japanese man, and across the decades they have held out hands, joined together, lived together for this island, for the orangutans who are Kensuke's family, and they've come together in spite of this terrible thing that had happened. So one has to keep positive. That's really important. But you must look them in the eye and tell them how it was. You can't just say, well, actually, there was this bit of a bomb in Japan. You can't do that. You've got to say what happened. And then they have got to learn to cope with it.
But a bit, to conclude, one last question about the medium as well. Because was it always clear that animation would come into play? Or you had perhaps an idea to make it, you know, like live action? But I'm just asking because there's a sort of... there's a transcendental thing about animation, which is like, you know, making our dreams come true with reality in a way. We really believe cartoons still. Was it maybe one of the reasons, or perhaps was something that it was, you know, adamant since the very beginning to make an animation?
I mean, the honest truth is a very simple one. That before I was involved in the film, another producer who is still involved, called Sarah Radcliffe, was trying to make the film as a live-action film. So they were going to use real actors, and actually, and this is going back eight years or so, real orangutans, not CGI, so the whole thing was going to be real. The fundamental reason for not doing it was one of budget. It became impossibly expensive to achieve that, and there were lots of issues about working with orangutans and everything else. So Michael and I worked together on some animation films, actually, for the London Olympics, and around about that same time, I think, there was an idea that the film would be better as an animation story, which I absolutely believe is true. So since I've been involved with it, it's always been animation, and I think you're absolutely right. It has that sort of transcendental quality. You can tell magical fables, and you can achieve a sense of absolute reality in terms of experience, but you can portray it in a way that can be dreamlike and beautiful.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you, Barnaby, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Here at Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.